And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul with your host, Laurie Houston. And tonight we are starting a brand new show. I'm very excited about it. It is called Holding the Heart Space with Mary McNabb. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you, Laurie. It's really fun to be here.
I'm very excited about this because I love the name and certainly everything that I have been wanting and preparing for and working towards has been, you know, helping people sort of master the heart, helping people get into their heart and really make that connection. So this show sort of feels very synchronistic with everything that's been going on in my life, and I think that's why we connected so well. So I'm very excited to have you with us.
Well, thank you so much. I'm excited for it too. The whole concept of holding the heart space came through literally in the shower, you know, the inspiration chamber, last year as I was preparing to take a whole new direction in life. And then, the whole direction of where the world is going, we could say needs to go from what presents as evidence, but really where it is going is to this direction of being led by the heart. So I'm really excited to be here too.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about what your journey has been to get you to where you are now and to get you to this place where you know that it's about holding the heart space.
Okay. We'll kind of come back to that holding concept as to who's actually doing the holding.
Nice.
But let's see. Well, my journey this way began with a very aware birth, actually. Mm-hmm. I remember coming from the light into the body. I'm told that's not a very common experience, but it's mine, so I wouldn't know. And I actually began sitting with my mother's spiritual teacher and participating in giving satsang when I was about 18 months old. Mm-hmm. I was not even 2 yet. And I have, as most of us do of our 2-year-old times, I have in and out memories of that. And then for my whole lifetime, I've just participated in the study of vibration, of consciousness. I formally studied music because to me, the ability to communicate from the heart is so entwined with sound, at least for humans, at least for our species and how we experience it, how we experience music. Someone famous whose name I can't remember right now said that music speaks to the place that words where words fail us. Mm. And I think that's very true. So that led me along my way. I've done a lot of spiritual reading. I've studied many of the world's esoteric traditions. I'm ordained in 3 of them, nice, for whatever that means. And then I had a mystery school teacher who taught various forms of what we, I suppose, would call spirituality that I was with for 13 years. And after that, really knew that there was something. Knew that it was time for me to leave, as though I loved him. Knew that there was something calling for me, but I didn't know what. And for me, a way of speaking about it is to say that it was the voice of the divine feminine, the sacred feminine, where in most of the world's traditions, not all of them, certainly not the Celtic or the Avalonian, but many, that voice had been not missing, but sort of dimmed down, stifled just a bit.
Definitely.
And at least in myself, if in no one else. And so what I can say about the Divine Feminine is that she found me. Mm. I knew that something was calling me. I knew that I was, the next step in my journey was something that I had not yet experienced. And she found me through exposure to some of the Avalonian mysteries, mm, and then to an invitation from a friend to France in the summer, where I ended up going through the Magdalen areas and ended up at Rennes Le Chateau having a vision there. And visions are not new to me. I've had them for most of my life. My early training was in the differentiation, as I guess is with people who see. Again, I don't know, because I was really little, and that was just my experience, where you learn to discern between what's happening with your physical body and what's happening in the vision. Right. And this particular vision, I was walking up on the tower at Rennes Le Chateau, and I began to walk into bodies, in the body that I was there in my, you know, khaki hiking trousers and my little sleeveless shirt. It was quite warm that day, my big sun hat, you know. And then in these blue robes and sandals that were like mine and yet very unlike mine. And having this experience of being in this place as two very distinct beings, two distinct souls. And I was shown to look out over the rampart at what is a ruin on one of the lower hills there. And I was watching, sort of in the inner, in the etheric, this battle taking place. I was watching this place be besieged. And I felt from this other being, I can only call her the Divine Feminine as the Magdalene in that moment. I mean, I really don't know. But I felt this, just watch, just observe. And then there was a moment where that particular fort or castle, I'm not sure what it was going to fall. It was inevitable. It had been breached. And there was this feeling from inside this other being, from inside her, okay, time to go. And there was no panic. There was no fear. There was no, oh, it's coming to get me. It was just this very obvious, well, it's getting a bit too close. Time to remove the presence. And she didn't say, my presence. There was no ego. It was time to remove the presence from that energy. That was the feeling, and later, the words. And so, as the two of us, I walked down out of the tower and out down along the base and had the experience of walking, sort of carrying my camera bag and also walking with an armful of flowers that were hers. And I went to sit outside and was asking, well, I know I'm being taught here. I know that this vision is starting to fade, and I know that this is a learning experience. What am I being taught? And what I heard inwardly was, there's no need to engage. The heart need not engage the fight, although it does whatever is in front of it. If there's no need to engage, presence simply must be removed until it can be honored. And then at that time, I actually started to do a lot of reading. I spent about a year reading everything I could about the Magdalene mysteries, the history, the conjectures, the theories, the everything, and just found over and over again that as an initiate of Isis, that that being, that was what she had done. She had simply walked away from any conflict. Not always the correct course, but that was hers. And it was my first learning about that way of moving through the heart. I am very much warrior trained. I did many years of martial arts. I always hated the fighting aspect of it, actually, so it was good for me to learn. But this vision was the beginning. And then I was led to more books, more reading. I love to study, so for me this was certainly not a punishment. And then I was led to do some energy work, and every piece of it more and more fell away from what it means to live through the mind or discern through the mind, and more coming back to, coming full circle to really being in the flow of the heart and the intuition and letting my life be completely led by that, and how it's not a loss of control. It's just this glorious beingness where there's a certainty that we are held, that I am held. I can make it very personal, that I am completely taken care of and guided in each moment, especially the ones where the mind would like to tell me otherwise. So that's sort of how I got here.
Well, as you talk, our paths seem to have crossed a few different ways. Just not quite in person, but we seem to have had some similar experiences. So that's another reason why the synchronicity is so attuned here. Interesting. Wow. Okay. So when did you, as you spoke at the very beginning of saying that you actually have memory of coming in, did you come in before you were born or after you were already born?
The memory I have is actually the birth canal.
Really?
Yes, of coming from this blue, white, silver light into, through this tunnel, almost a ribbed tunnel, and then the memory of sort of opening the physical eyes and being very startled, yes.
Wow, that would have been quite the experience. I have some interesting experiences, but I came before the womb, and I came while I was in the womb, and I needed to go through a few things to understand what part of my purpose was. But that is very unique. Mm-hmm. I don't imagine there are very many people that have that memory.
Mm-hmm. Well, wow. there may well have been experiences before that. I'm sure that there were. That's just the memory that I have.
Mm-hmm. So. Wow, that's really unique. And definitely I love your depiction of, you know, the goddess finding you. I mean, that divine feminine, although has, and I always say this, I mean, I really believe that it had been pretty much extinguished from the planet, not that it wasn't still there, but the voice was definitely lost in most ways because, well, for many reasons, I think we really needed to have, you know, the very masculine energy so that we could create and get ready for where we were or where we're going. But then the balance that needs to come now is a result of, you know, the goddess energy really being anchored back on the planet. And I think, you know, there are a lot of women that are going through so many interesting experiences and, you know, truly trying to redefine what it means to be purely feminine, to honor and understand that presence within us, because it really has been silenced. And I think, you know, we're really completely redefining what it means to be women.
Mm-hmm. Yes, or to show up and wear the woman costume. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, just as going forward from this place, those who are wearing the masculine costume are redefining that. You know, we all have both within us. It's just that the voice of the goddess has been so stifled that it's a learning experience for all of us and a rebalancing. And yes, I agree, this last period was necessary. Yeah. You know, everything is. The evolution of consciousness is what it is. Mm-hmm. And we can only theorize most of the time. So, but yeah, it's been a treasure to be found by that particular quality of the divine and held by it in a way that I really had no reference for, although it might seem that I did.
I mean, it seems that you were being prepared, but it's a very, very unique, very different. And of course, there are women warriors as well. As we know, many goddesses were warriors. But mm-hmm. Kuan Yin, although still coming from the place of compassion, I mean, it's a really fascinating time. I think it's an amazing time to be a woman on this planet because we are going through such an incredible shift. I mean, we all are. But when the woman fully starts to embody the goddess energy, then the men really then have permission to heal in a way that I don't think they've been allowed to, because they have had to hold such a masculine costume, as you call it.
Yes. And when we in the, you know, the feminine costume own all aspects of feminine divinity, the warrior as well. As I said, I had many years of martial arts training, and I taught for 12 years. Mm. And I got to see in teaching, I taught Shotokan karate and for 12 years, and I taught at a YWCA, so 90% of my students were girls, which was such a treat because I had been, you know, maybe one of five in the schools I had trained in. And I got to see the consciousness of holding the warrior, but holding the warrior from the heart, where it wasn't about competition and winning. It was about that fierce compassion, that what we call the mother bear energy in the Western world, or of that support and nurturing of life itself, which can come from a very gentle place and also be fierce.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk then about, you know, the container of the heart space and how that functions.
Okay, well, this again was what we might call a download. I had been teaching a certain method of inquiry that was yet another download for some years, and I had gotten the calendar for 2009 actually pretty much set and stepped into the shower one morning and got, no, this way. And this was very much from that fierce goddess energy that we know and actually love. I actually do love her in her wrathful aspect. And it was no this way. And so what's been called the heart space and what's been taught through Delphic Wave and through myself is this triple alchemical container in energy for allowing shifts to happen. And the word allowing is very, very important.
Yeah.
The first space is almost allowing the heart chakra, Anahata, in the center of the chest, if for those that know it, to expand so that it contains the entire physical body, the emotions, the mind. And then there is a second layer, again spherical. These are spherical containers. We're completely held within them. This is allowing oneself to be held by the divine feminine, whether she is in her mother aspect or not. The second layer, another sphere, we've just been calling it the cocoon, where any energies that are simply no longer serving, for whatever reason, and the reasons, the story really doesn't need to matter so much anymore, but these energies are invited into this space, which has a very definite boundary between the heart space and this cocoon. It's very safe. You know, the heart space is sacrosanct. It's between you and the divine only. And then the cocoon is where all these other energies can simply be invited. Just inviting them to go there and be transformed. And the way it was shown to me was actually kind of silly and humorous. It was the divine feminine saying, well, this cocoon is the divine feminine's energy laundering service, where, you know, anything that no longer serves, any aspect of personality, you can put your family in there, you know, anything. It's like just goes there and transforms. And what happens with these energies, all aspects of self or memory or, you know, things we don't like in the world or in ourselves, all those energies really are offered two choices by the divine. They can choose to simply go home to the core, to the home self, to the soul. And we never lose any part of ourselves, really. You know, all of the deep shamanic work teaches us that. And the other option is that these energies can go through this cocoon, this transformation process, and come with us for the rest of this lifetime, the rest of this incarnation, for this adventure where we are entering a new cycle and everything is different and life as we know it has already changed. And the only reason it looks like it hasn't is because there's still so many energies and consciousnesses pretending as if. And so then there's a third container, which really doesn't have a name. Sometimes it's referred to as the larger transformational space. I'm assuming the divine feminine may give us a name for it at some point, or maybe not. And it's really just where the energies go that need a little time, aren't really sure where they want to go, need a little healing, need divine intervention in a very direct and personal way. So there's this triple energetic space that happens. And what I was shown, and over the year that I have taught this, or this has been taught through me, is really more accurate. I've been shown that each of these spaces has its very unique purpose, its unique way of moving energy, and that this is one of the most ancient technologies, the most ancient alchemies of self, to allow, not to try and dictate with the mind or direct or control, but to place oneself firmly in the arms of the divine, if you will, and allow these things to happen. So the major energy of the core, the heart space, the sphere that holds, is what is nurturing, nourishing, supportive, caring, cherishing, acknowledging, appreciative, and loving of you, of each one of us. Those are the only energies that are allowed into that space. And so just to allow yourself to be in that way, and I'd be happy to guide us through that if would be helpful to anyone. But
no, I think it would definitely be. I think trying to listening to you and then trying to figure out where these spaces are, I think people would love to have more guidance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, why don't we do that then, if this feels like the time?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So the first step in this is just to relax. You don't have to close your eyes. You can if that's useful and comfortable. It sometimes helps. So just eliminate the outside distractions. And just take a couple of very, very deep, easy, relaxing breaths. And we forget to breathe deeply down into the diaphragm, as well as to breathe deeply up into the upper chest. And just let the body relax. And then allow the focus of the attention to go right to the center of the chest, the heart chakra. And just rest there for a few moments. Just rest. No doing, just being. And then as you allow yourself to be there, just with normal breathing, allow each inhalation to expand the size of the chakra as a sphere. It's expanding in every direction, omnidirectionally, becoming a big ball around you. I've heard it compared to the capsule in the movie Contact, or I've heard the experience compared to being in one of those little things they call a hamster ball, where you stay upright and everything's around. Just allowing yourself to be held in this sphere as it expands with your breath. And relaxing into that experience. You don't have to see the sphere around you, just feel it, and then allow the divine, especially the divine feminine, to just fill this spherical container with all of the energies that will most nourish and nurture you. You don't need to know what they are. She does. You are part of her. You are part of the all, whether you see it as masculine, feminine, both or neither. And just allowing that energy to fill this space completely. Almost as though you're floating in it. And it has a very succinct, a very strong boundary. Made of energy, made of spirit. So nothing but these nourishing energies can permeate this space. And then from this place, just observe first the physical body, how the physical body is feeling in this space, just held in the ocean of the divine. And any energies that really are not any longer fully supporting, you know, every energy that we allow into our field, we have always believed supported us in some way. So just allowing any that no longer serve now to be ready to perhaps change or depart. And then noticing outside that lovely, safe spiritual boundary, another sphere, another layer, like the nested dolls we're familiar with. A second sphere. Just let it form, feel it, if you can't see it. And allow any of these energies that might be within the physical body, it might be within the emotional body, to move into that second sphere, that cocoon, that beautiful cauldron of transformation.
And is that outside the original sphere that we've created?
Or is it inside? I'm sorry, Lori, can you repeat that? You're very faint.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that outside or inside the first sphere that we've created?
It's outside the first sphere. Yeah. The heart space, the core space, is the inner sphere. And the second one is outside, and the third one is outside of that.
Okay. So, enveloping the first one, or completely separate?
Enveloping,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. In truth, what they really are at their most metaphysical level is they interpenetrate. These are in slightly different dimensional bandwidths.
Right.
But for purposes of simplifying it, yes, the second is outside the first, and the third is outside the second.
Okay.
So if you were to draw three circles, one outside the other, mm-hmm. that's sort of how the spheres relate to one another.
Perfect.
Yeah. And then just allowing the third circle, the third sphere, to just be there, to show itself to you in whatever way it feels most appropriate now, and knowing that the energies that will show up in that space, at least at the beginning of using this or playing with it, will be those that just need a little more time, those that perhaps constitute some of the wounding that has turned into scar tissue, or things we thought we've dealt with, but they're little bits and pieces, or things that are a bit too tender to transform all at once, need more time. They just go into that third space, and we never need to really pay too much attention to them again. They will be helped along, handheld through the transformation process by the Divine Feminine, and they will move in whatever timing they need. And by they, again, we're meaning perhaps emotions that are uncomfortable, or life experiences that we've really wanted to get rid of for a long time, or the things that hurt the most that even when we think we're really looking for everything, they hide from us. And just remembering that those things are always unconscious, and they always think they're serving us and trying to protect us. So it's just resting within this inner sphere, encased in another. And feeling that, and allowing that transformation to happen just by intent and by choosing to trust, and feeling held by it. And what this does, even for, a minute or two a day, it builds the trust muscle, for one. And it also allows, it's something that in our doing culture, we've honestly forgotten how to do, is allow, be held in that space, and let it do the doing, let it guide, so that our actions, our motions, come from that certain place of just knowing. And just allowing yourself to be held in this allows the turbulence that is so much in the world right now to just be something like the ocean that the beach ball bounces on top of. And it doesn't know how big the waves are because it's just bouncing along on top and having a good time in the sun. Or it's ducking under like a sea lion, and just the space holds and envelops the entire time. So at first, when we play with this, we make it a practice. We practice being held in this space as though you can do that, but we can. And then as it becomes more and more automatic, the real benefits start to show up, where things that might have gotten in and triggered us go directly into that second layer, and we can watch them, but from the place of compassionate detachment, and we can engage or not, depending on what our intuition tells us. So this is really, these are the structures of this space. So holding the heart space maybe is a little bit of a misnomer. It sounds like a doing. In certain forms of inquiry, the space dragon is known to be the divine feminine, you know, that which is benign and gentle and fierce all at the same time, and yet cannot be held. So it's a little bit of a misnomer or a paradox maybe to say holding the heart space, where truthfully it's allowing the divine heart, the heart of hearts, to hold us.
And so when we're contemplating or just allowing the first level, it's those things that we want to experience, or those things, the intentions that we make and the experiences that we're wanting to embrace?
Partly, yes. But mostly it's allowing all of those things to be present and really observing,
right,
and feeling with the heart and the intuition what is Source's offering or Spirit's offering that fills up the space that really does nurture and nourish us. Because we, in our, you know, conscious personal selves, might not have very good definitions of that. So this is almost the place, you know, this is almost the place of when we say this or something better, this is the something better place.
Okay.
Where we're saying, let's allow those energies in and just let them hold us and inform us. Not so much teach and dictate to, but just inform us as to, oh, this is how it feels. You know, all of our intentions notwithstanding.
Mm-hmm. And then the second level are the areas where we may have gotten triggered in the past, or things that we'd like to see from a larger perspective.
Yes, or things that we may not even be aware of,
sure,
that are simply no longer useful on our path forward. And those could be physical things in our lives, or they could be things like jealousy, bitterness, resentment,
mm-hmm,
or they could be those bad definitions I was just alluding to of what love is, or what safety is, or what real nourishment is. We might have not so great definitions of those, just based on conditioning from childhood or other lives or from somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, so those can just, we just invite that anything and everything that really isn't serving us going forward has a place in these second and third layers that will be fully supported by Source. And the key to all of this really is choosing to trust.
Nice. It's a lovely space to go into, for sure.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's a very supportive space, and it supports also any other method of journeying or inquiry, anything, any of the techniques and tools we all have. There are so many. It supports that, but in a very, very different way. Those tools can all be used, of course, simultaneously with this. This is just almost like a recess or a rest period where all the work is still going on, the transformation is still happening, but we have let go of control. Or we have let go, or trying to anyway, of saying, okay, Spirit, just this once, you do it. And then that starts to feel so good, actually, that instead of it being just this once, it's, you know what, why don't you just do it all the time? And that doesn't come from a place of abdicating responsibility. You know, it doesn't. It comes from taking responsibility and saying, I know that some of these things are still here or are with me or I'm learning from or whatever, because I can't see past wanting to be in control. And there's some part of me that thinks responsibility and control are the same thing. And they're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it really comes from that place of being thoroughly and totally supported and saying, okay, you do it. It's not quitting. It's no white flags, no throwing in the towel. Not at all.
It is an interesting idea with regards to our want or desire or need to, you know, be in the driver's seat, be in control of things, and very misunderstood about what responsibility is really about. Responsibility, if seen from the right light or from the higher purpose, is certainly more freeing than, you know, thinking that somebody can do something to us, or we are the victim. And so learning to trust and allow spirit is probably one of our biggest challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so at this time. And to do that from the heart, from that place, which, you know, has been labeled as a feminine quality for however long we've had labels, probably, of doing it from the place of responsibility, you know, if we translate just in English, meaning, as we've heard many times, just able to respond, but respond rather than react. When we react, it's always from a conditioned place or a defended place or just a default autopilot place. You know, 90% of them are from there, instead of from the heart, which is just that thing that happens so fast. It's a nanosecond where we really can learn to flip that switch and say, what does the heart feel? What does the heart want to say to this or respond to this? Or does the heart simply want to be still? Or is there a way that the heart would respond that is different to what a normal sort of programmed reaction might be? It is very different, and it really is not a place of, as is obvious to most of us, mental control.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about surrender a bit? I know that that's it's something that everybody talks about, but it's one of those concepts that I think people don't really grasp.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly didn't for a really long time. I thought I did, or I wanted to, or I aspired to, or maybe all three all at once. And I've heard so many people who come to me for the classes or readings or whatever say, you know, but I am surrendering. I am letting go. I've let go of everything in the kitchen sink, you know. And the place to go with that is always to say, who's the I in that sentence?
Mm.
Who is the I? Which aspect of self? We are all so multifaceted. Which aspect of self just said, I am surrendering in that really belligerent tone of voice? You know, I mean, I did that for years. I know it, know that place well. And that place really does not think that it is defended. That place in all of us, or places, or voices, they really feel like they are letting go, and they are shipping the oars, and they are not trying to paddle upstream, and they are doing all that. And my experience of it has been that if there's a doing involved, it's not surrender. And if there's a mental, I this, or I that, it's so hard to speak about it, so hard to use words, but that is a defended place. That's a place in the ego that still wants to be in control, even if it's being in control of surrendering. And how it happened for me was this allowing. It's what my friend Melanie calls the trust fall into the arms of the divine. And I can admit that when I worked in the corporate world and on corporate retreats and things, you know, that faith fall, that trust fall back into the arms of your team was something that I not only couldn't do, I just flat out refused. And so my process was looking first at what are the fears that say, well, you know, I can't fall backwards. They're just going to let me go and I'm going to smack my head on whatever, you know, whatever they are. Or when you get past that, it was just, well, all right, what aspect is that I, or what aspect really is unwilling for whatever reason the mind comes up with, to let go and say to spirit, okay, I'm going to let you hold me. I'm going to let you refresh my soul. I'm going to let you nurture and nourish me, because the truth is, I don't know how. I may have some good ideas and some good training, and I may have learned a lot along the way, but the truth is that that I, the one that was so adamant that she really had surrendered everything, she didn't know how. And so what finally did it for me was being in that place of, I have tried everything I know. I have tried every tool in every book, not just mine. And nothing is working the way that I want it to. Interesting. I quit. And in that moment, it was a different kind of letting go, a different kind of quitting than waving the white flag or throwing in the towel or allowing oneself to be captured. Those are our fears, you know, that surrender means submitting, that surrender means not being in control. And for me, the funny truth of it is that that's true, but it's not the way that I had held my definitions of it. My definitions meant that meant all those things that I had intended and visualized and everything that, well, I would never have those if I let go of control. And I really hadn't wanted to admit that there was still some of that left. And when I finally said at one point, okay, I've tried everything and clearly I have no clue what will work. And I admit that in a not very nice tone of voice, I said to Spirit, okay, you do it. And damned if she didn't. Hmm. I mean, you know, she did. And I sort of sat there with my, you know, all the awareness I've amassed through this lifetime and said, oh, wow, that was what it took. Not all it took, but that was what it took, was to finally say, I don't know, and I'm going to trust that you do. Show me. And I think that those are the two most important words that we can say to Spirit, are just from that place in the heart, from that place of, I don't know, maybe something close to true humility that says, okay, Spirit, show me. And I know that you are holding me right now while you do. And I'm choosing to trust that this is safe. And so for me, that really is Spirit's definition of surrender, is allowing myself to be held, allowing myself to be supported, allowing myself to be nurtured. And this is not the capital egoic self. This is the real authentic place that is both strong and vulnerable, and that is willing to shine just because. That place, allowing that to be supported, that is really surrender.
Yeah.
At least in my experience.
Mm-hmm. And for most people, that's a scary place to go to, because what if?
Exactly. What if is exactly what comes up. And it did for me over and over and over and over and over through my mystery school training and this and that training and, you know, years and years and years of this. And it's what in my classes we call the butt-butt bird and the poo-poo monster. That the butt-butt bird comes in and you know what she does. Mm. And the poo-poo monster comes in and goes, oh, well, that'll never work. And here are all the reasons why. Poo-poo-poo-poo, you know. And yes, exactly. The mind does that. And so it's really, surrender is really the place where the mind gives way to the heart. And it's not that one overpowers the other. Not anymore. You know, we talk about mind over matter. it's not the mind's job to overpower the heart. It's the mind's true job to support and make easier the actions that the heart would take. You know, the mind remembers how to stop at stop signs and red lights, you know, or how to work our computer or whatever. And it's those functions, it's the mind's job to perform those functions in service of the heart. And so, yes, at first, because our minds are not trained that way, they're just not. We don't need to assign blame or especially to beat ourselves up about that. It's the way the mind was conditioned. We trained it that way, and then we get mad at it. You know, so it's what if, but, poo-poo. Yes, we've trained our minds to do that to keep us safe. And so this is a very gentle acknowledging the mind for the beautiful tool that it is and saying to the what-if voice, saying to the poo-poo and the but, there, yes, yes, okay. And sometimes, shut up. But very gently, and saying, let's listen to the heart and move the mind into the passenger seat. Not to go away, not to kill it, not to, you know, turn off the monkey mind. Let's beat the monkey mind into submission. Poor monkey, you know? It's to say to it, tell you what, wouldn't you rather ride over here and enjoy the view and support the heart with everything that you've learned, with everything that you know how to do? Wouldn't that be a more interesting job description? And at first, as we all do this, the mind will fight back because we asked it to. We told it, here's the status quo, here's what works, here's what doesn't, here is the rule base, here's what goes in the subconscious, here's what we bring with us into the unconscious, here's what goes there to keep us safe. We've taught our minds that, or allowed them to be taught, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so to now we say to the mind, okay, we're going to go into a new phase of learning. This type of surrender requires a foundational, starting fresh level of beginner's mind. And very often our minds will say, well, you know, that means I have to lose everything I've learned. I lose all the wisdom I've gained. Not true. Wisdom, which also is of the heart, stays with us. The mind gets to do what it's good at. It gets to start learning again. And what I have found is this is a more useful way to deal with the mind. It's the more nurturing, nourishing way to deal with the mind from the place of the Sophia, the wisdom, and sometimes from Kali and Sekhmet too. That's where the little shut up comes from. But, you know, of the place of saying, okay, let's learn a whole way of being in this life, in this body, all over again. We get to do it again without having to drop the physical vehicle, without having to go through a physical death. So this type of surrender does actually not require, but facilitate a type of shamanic death. And it can be as crunchy or as gentle as we ask it to be. But that really is what happens. So yeah, those voices definitely show right up on cue.
They do, and they're what create those doubts that we are then to have the faith and trust in that we often find so difficult.
Exactly, and so it is, as my friend Max says, it's working the trust muscle, but doing it from this place of allowing. You know, I'm choosing to allow. I'm choosing to trust. I'm willing to trust. Even though in this moment, I'm not trusting. I'm not doing it. I'm worried. My mind's going all over the place. I mean, that's not what's, you know, happening for me personally at this moment, but it has over and over and over. To where we then say to the mind, okay, thank you. You're doing what you were trained to do. And I'm choosing to trust. I am choosing to be willing to trust. And thank you to Spirit that this is getting stronger every time I choose this. And as we all know, the gratitude is an important component of keeping your heart open to yourself, not just to Spirit, but some traditions, in the yogic traditions, it's called opening the back of the heart chakra, but opening the heart to yourself, self-love, self-forgiveness, you know, cutting yourself a little slack maybe and saying, okay, I thank you that this is getting stronger every time, even though right now in this moment, it might not feel like it.
And that's the important part. I mean, that's really the gift in all of this, is to really bring that gratitude in, or to really understand that it is us, that we are often so... A little bit of static has been coming through, which I do apologize. I think it's between the two of our energies. we do have to, you know, come from that place of self-love is an area that we're not really taught about. And that's, you know, I wish in school we could be shown, you know, in one of the courses about, you know, how to take care, be gentle, and love ourselves instead of, you know, usually what we learned through was through criticism and, well, the ways typical families and the school system, you know, teach us.
Yes, exactly. This is my wish as well, is that children, there are schools that do this, but there are very few of them yet, that teach children, teach young souls, or young bodies, they're not young souls, teach the young bodies and the developing minds that they are responsible, not at fault, not to blame, but responsible for really being true to that feeling that is unique within them, that's unique to that soul and that body, that being true to the heart center that is their unique expression of divinity is really their responsibility. I mean, I have countless examples, spot examples here and there from various cultures where children are being taught this. It's my profound wish that that would be taught just globally across the board, that children would grow up learning to be conscious, learning to come from the heart for themselves, and that that isn't selfish. That's different. Yeah,
it's an interesting area that a lot of people struggle with. We're all struggling with how to find that confidence, that space of self that comes from that higher place that we also can make that connection within and also see it when we look in the mirror, or see it when, you know, we can see it in others often, and we yet have such a difficult time seeing it within ourselves.
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the things that Louise Hay pioneered, was looking at your own eyes in the mirror and saying, I love you. And how many people can't do just that, or the difference between that and what is often called narcissism.
Yeah. You still there?
Yes.
Okay. Because we're getting a little bit more static.
I know. We're having an electronic windstorm here.
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't know. Something like that.
Right.
Technology is wonderful when it works. Yeah.
You know, it really is.
Yes, I think that's true. I mean, we all think about that, don't we? And that's part of the whole concept of holding the heart space, or being held in the heart of hearts, is moving into that place where it's that place of, in a certain way, our original innocence, of that precocious child within all of us that isn't the obnoxious precocious child, well, maybe some days, but, you know, is the one that knows why she's here and just shines just because. You know, that, there was a movie a few years ago. It was called Stardust, and I usually don't remember a lot of the details of things like this, but it was a star who had fallen to Earth in human woman form. And the great talent of the star was simply to shine. And it would happen effortlessly when she was happy or just enjoying herself or in love. And that really, it's truly the feeling that I have that that is what we need to nurture within all of us. That authenticity, you know, that place where we just shine just because. And that we need to support that, nourish that, encourage that, and get rid of, or maybe just alter, update our definitions of what self-love and self-ish really are. You know, they need a healthy change.
Although I have to say, my favorite part of that movie is Robert De Niro.
Oh, right. I forgot. Yes. Talk about being true to yourself. Yeah.
And that was sort of the precocious child, I think.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And the fun part that his whole crew, you know, he sort of thought he was doing this in secret, and his whole crew already knew and loved him, you know, in spite of or because of. Nobody knows. You know, no one cares.
It's a great movie, actually, and it's exactly what you're talking about, which is a perfect example for people. So if you haven't seen it, you should see it now, because it is a great example of what you're talking about, that shining, because that is definitely, it's what so many of us women are afraid to do, because I think there's a part of the collective unconscious that still holds the memories of what has happened to women over the centuries. And that pain of shining, meaning, you know, almost instant death for women, and therefore they had to learn to shine through their husbands or through the men, or do it in a way, like we so have learned how to hide our light that it's sometimes very difficult, even when we're aware of it, to want to do it.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, all the prescriptions against, all the ways we've been to that light stream and, you know, pointed that flashlight to bounce off of someone else, or, you know, contributed our energy into another's success, or, you know, how many of us have said, well, I help people find their dreams and everyone around me finds their dreams, and what about mine? And that's an archetypal, interesting limitation that has been there in the feminine for just way too long. And it needs to come off. And for some, it comes off, you know, very abruptly. And for others, it comes off very gently, or over time, or with a great deal of struggle. But I think that's a lot of the shift that we're in, at least in the from the feminine perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been a great show. I hope we've had a few people that have been upset because there's been some static, and we'll talk about that after the show if you'd like, about some different possibilities. But, you know, I really enjoyed this show, and certainly the archive will not have as much static as people are hearing, which I do apologize. I'm not quite sure why that happens, because a lot of the times it's not there, and then sometimes we get shows where it's there. So I'm not quite sure why that happens, but it's been a great show. And is there anything that you would like to sort of end the evening with?
Just the profound wish for everyone, hopefully that they can hear through this, through whatever this was, but just that that you allow the heart space to find you. You know, just allowing that to find you in whatever way works best for you.
Silly static. Yeah, finding that. All right. Well, again, lovely show, and I can't wait to hear our next show, which will be the 4th in May, which is...
Yes,
May 24th. May 24th. Perfect. And great. So thank you, Mary.
Oh, thank you, Lori. This was really fun.
All right.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.